It's Sunday Conversation with Janae Renee.
And Teddy Reese.
And it's a new Sunday. Actually, the last Sunday of Black History Month.
Yes, it is. But this has been an amazing month.
It has. Yes, it has. Yes. Let me shout you out. I know you had an event last week. I missed it. I'm sorry.
Oh, it was How amazing. Was it? The Black History Month Observance Breakfast was awesome. Congratulations again to Mr. Greg Davis Sr.
Yes.
For winning the Legacy of Leadership Award. And it was well deserved.
Well deserved, definitely. Great well man, deserved. Great man.
Yes, he is.
All right, speaking of great men, we got two great men in the studio with us today. Why don't you do the honors?
Absolutely. We have two gentlemen that I have the honor of calling great friends, but they are very progressive in the Columbus community and making big moves. And we're joined here today by Mr. Marquis Skinny Avery. And we also have with us Pastor Adrian Chester, the youngest pastor in Columbus, Georgia.
Oh, wow. Yes, okay.
Yes, sir.
So, now, Skinny, can I call you Skinny or you want me to call you Marquis?
You can call me Skinny.
Before we start this conversation. Skinny
Let's keep it informal.
All right, Skinny all right, it is.
All right, well, we're going to call you Skinny. Well, you know, this Sunday, we're actually wrapping up our conversations on Black History Month. And, you know, the first two weekends of the month, we had wonderful conversations with some awesome people, Mr. Robert Anderson, Coach Wallace Davis, Ms. Evelyn Turner Pugh, and Ms. Della Jo Grimes, and they talked about Black history from, you know, from their perspective. But we don't want to leave out the millennials, the young people. Mm-hmm. So we want to have a conversation with you
Folks
two today.
Folks of the future.
Born and raised right here in Columbus, you've witnessed some progress, so we want to talk about some things. So just generally, let's start out with a general question. To you, Pastor Chester, generally, how have you say Columbus's progress from when you were, you know, born and old enough to remember to where we are now?
Well, I would say generally Columbus is on the move. I think we're on the brink of something great. But comparing to when I was younger until now, progress has been slow, but it's steady. And I think one thing that it's attributing to that particular progress is there are a lot of millennials, a lot of people moving to this area with progressive mindsets, and there are a lot of people behind the scenes, such as Marquise on the grassroots efforts and many others who are just trying to push the wheel a little bit forward.
You know, it reminds me of the saying that favor ain't fair.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, and some people maybe look at it and say, it's not fair. This young guy is pastoring the church at such young age, but you know what? God called you to something.
It is what it is.
You have to take the bull and run with it, right? Take the bull by the horns and run with it. So, you know, what has that been like for you? You know, being young and a part of a young millennial group that we see very few people in Columbus in the young age that are actually leading a very large organization like yourself. What are some of the challenges that you have?
Well, really, on a lighter side, just teaches me to not to go to Atlanta to party, but go completely out of state. but it's a joy. It's been a pain, and to be surrounded by people who see the benefit of young leadership in this city and to have people behind you. It's a blessing. It's a blessing and a curse. But it's cool, though.
Well, you know, you're being used in a way to move a city and to build a army of other folks to come behind you. And that's absolutely
Well, I wouldn't
phenomenal.
Necessarily say come behind me, but to walk alongside.
To walk alongside. Yes. All right. Well yeah, said. We're going to be politically correct.
Yes.
Okay, I got you. I got you. Mr. Avery, my friend, Skinny. Skinny, you know, I certainly got excited about hearing your take because, you know, you have some of your actions, and I know some folks out there in radio land may not want us, you know, like, may not like what I'm about to say, but a lot of your actions have been reflective of some of the civil rights leaders, your willingness to be arrested for what you feel is right out there on the street, you know, your willingness to help organize marches and rallies so that the public is actually being heard. Do you think that those items have been productive for you? And what do you see as far as what the young people may need to do in the future to continue that type of message, getting out there, exercising the freedom of speech?
Well, definitely, Teddy, you and Mr. Janae Renee, I want to thank y'all for having me and Brother Adrian here on the show. One of the things that I realized about activism is that probably is a lesson that an unlikely person would have taught me. And it came from Teresa Thomas in the mayor. When she was first running for mayor, she said that 90% of the job is in just showing up. When you look at our community, you know, the problems that we face and how we take them on, you know, Columbus is always kind of at the end of things, of trying to get things going. And so a lot of times I find myself saying, you know, well, if not me, then who? Mm-hmm. And so I'm willing to stand up for what is right.
That's
you
right.
know, I'm willing to put my life on the line. I'm willing to, you know, sacrifice for my family because I believe that, you know, that standing up for what's right is our moral obligation to this community and to this world, so that the path that we blaze, you know, will help generations of young people. And so that's why, you know, I like having conversations like this because it's vitally important for us to be involved in our community. It's vitally important for us to you know, resist injustice, inequality. And so I want to be a part of that. And so for many years, I've, you know, just tried to be a voice for those that have been disenfranchised and those that have been wrote off and those that have been marginalized. And, you know, a lot of people think that, oh, you got to have a fancy degree or you got to, you know, have a nice job title or you got to come from a prestigious family to serve your community. And that's just not the case. You know, just as you are, you know, you can do a lot for your community. And I think that that's a message that we ought to pass on to other young men and women alike.
So let me ask you a question. Do you think that it's, it's kind of a two-part question. First, how do you get more youth involved in the same things that you are doing, you know, standing up for their rights, activism, and things like that? And then when you look at the youth today and what they are doing, do you think that they are having the same effect as maybe people who were marching and stuff back in the day, right here in Columbus? Mm-hmm. Not overall, but just right here in Columbus.
Well, I think that this is something me and Teddy always talks about, is that, you know, is young people that have led, you know, every movement in American history.
Right.
And this time, you know, with our moving forward, will be no different. I think young people are engaged, you know. Can they be more engaged? Absolutely. But I think that one thing that gets young people engaged is talking about issues that directly affect them. You know, when you get to talking about taxes and healthcare and
politics, and then, I hate to say it,
yeah,
politics,
you know, the environment or something like yeah. that. It's kind of, you know, but I think that marches still work, you know. I think that protests still work, you know. I think that you can't just march and protest and think that your job is over, you know.
Well, see, that's what I see a lot of times on social media. I was having a conversation about a week or so ago, that I feel a lot of people, young people, get out here and march just to get a like on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
or get a, you know, a share on social media. So it's like, how do we get them to really understand this is a problem? So if you're out here marching, be out here marching for the right reason and not because this person over here is doing it or it's the cool thing to do.
Well, you know, we definitely have a lot of social media activists, you know. They'll gladly go to Twitter and sound off in 140
right.
characters. But you won't see them in the streets. You won't see them
right.
doing anything. And so I think that that's a big part of it, too. We got to, you know, we can't just say, well, you know, I posted something on Facebook, so, you know, I done did my part for my
yeah.
community. No, we got to, you know, start going to PTA meetings. We got to start going to the church, you know. The church has been a bedrock in the African-American community. You know, we got to start getting engaged in civic organizations and, you know, just start playing our part.
You know, the churches have been a bedrock, but unfortunately, lately, we've seen a lot of pastors being attacked on social media and in other places, you know, because of their involvement, you know. And it, when I think of it, I look at it from a two-pronged approach. You know, when a pastor is pastoring his church and leading his people, that's his calling by God, but they are still an individual.
Right.
And do they not still preserve the individual right to express what too impacts them?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they do. And Pastor Chester, you know, you may want to chime in on this because I know, you know, people have said some things about you and your involvement and things of that nature, and I haven't necessarily looked at it as fair criticism because you're still an individual. You still pay taxes.
Yes, sir.
You know, you went to school in this school district, this system. You grew up here. Mm-hmm. Your family-owned business is here. They've contributed to the Columbus economy. And you know, but you still remain that man of God and man of respect, and you don't necessarily respond or get down to their level. You know, you remain up top. How do you maintain that composure? And what role do you see pastors playing, you know, in leadership in Columbus? And don't tell me you pray about it. I don't want to hear the
political
side. I want to know as the man.
Yes, sir.
Because we are still flesh and bone.
Yeah.
But as the man, how do you maintain yourself?
So I take great wisdom from Howard Thurman, who was a mentor to Dr. Martin Luther King. And Howard Thurman took the approach. He says, you know, for social, civic, or political change, you need people on every front. Mm-hmm. You need people outside in the streets. Mm-hmm. You need the activists in the streets. You need the academics teaching and motivating others. And also you need those, you know, sitting at the table with elected officials saying, hey, this is what the person's in the streets want.
That's right.
That you got to have different people, a part of your team, part of your squad, that everybody can't go about it the same way. So all of us, we have to, as Marquise was sharing, you know, you have to pick that particular arena in which you know you're going to be most effective.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, marching, that's not my thing, but I ain't going to knock Marquise for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to work my area, but we have to be a cohesive unit,
right,
of letting everybody know this is what we want. This is how we're gonna get it done. And so that's how I really deal with it. I stay in my lane, stay in my vein. That for me is you know, the academy, the bringing up. You know, I refer back to a lot of the times in anything that I do, Oprah Hendricks, the politics of Jesus. That if
right.
that if you're gonna expose the workings of oppression, you got to call the demon by name. You got to say that, hey, that's wrong.
That's wrong.
But not only saying it wrong, I have to then empathize and say I have to make that injustice my injustice. Mm-hmm. And say if, you know, although it didn't happen to me, it happened to somebody just like me.
Right. Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yes, sir.
And we're sitting here with two young, involved men in our community, Marquise Skinner and Avery, and Pastor Adrian Chester.
Just call me Juice Man.
Yeah, Juice Man. I will not do that. Pastor Adrian Chester. And the elephant in the room is, there's a gap,
yeah,
in communication. There's a gap in mentoring. There's a gap in relationships between the younger generation and our wiser generation. I'm not gonna call them older. I'm just gonna say the wiser generation, the baby boomers. Mm-hmm. And as we know, and as we're already seeing, baby boomers everywhere are beginning to retire. They're beginning to retire from elected office. They're beginning to retire from, you know, executive positions. They're beginning to retire their doctor practices, their lawyer practices, and there will be a lot of different vacancies, but we still have that void of a transition of knowledge. And I truly believe you don't know where you're going if you don't understand where you came from.
Right.
That's why it's important that we maintain those communication lines between the younger generation and the older generation. How do we fix that?
I think one of the things is that the older, the wiser generation thinks that, you know, millennials are moving too fast. They feel that, you know, they should wait their turn. They feel like, you know, they should, you know, just sit on the sideline until we give you a phone call. But the thing with us as progressives versus us as versus conservatives, it's conservatives are preparing their bench. They're getting their people together. And, you know, they'll do them a couple of years in elected office, and they'll come on down and allow somebody else to have an opportunity. That's not what we do. We sit in office for 30, 40 years and you know, don't want nobody to challenge us. You know, if somebody wants to run for office and they run it against somebody that's already an elected official, we feel like they're being disrespectful. And I think that we got to change that. I think that you know, one of the ways of ushering in this new generation of leadership, it's acceptance as one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't be scared of us. We're not trying to run you out. We just think that we got a voice to offer to the process as well.
Right, right. And if you look at it, you're absolutely right. If you look at the conservative side of the fence, even right now, Josh McCown, Senator Josh McCown, has already announced he's not going to seek re-election in 2018.
After three terms.
And after three terms. And they're already gearing up on who's going to replace mm-hmm. him. You look now, the youngest person on this Columbus City Council is, you know, Walker Garrett. And we all know that he's a Republican. That's not a secret. He's a conservative. And so what we, image-wise, people would look at it and say, you know, young people are either not doing anything or they're not prepared. And so,
well, they don't want to see us do anything, you know. It's kind of like you turn a blind eye to something you don't want to see, you know.
Well, what can young people do to make sure that they are in positions of ready, if you will? You know, back in the day, we used to jump rope, and that rope used to be spinning and used to do that little rocket thing with your hip, trying right. to wait on that perfect motion.
As you're doing right
now.
Get
in there, yeah, but they can't see it. But you know,
used to jump rope?
Everybody jump rope. Oh, come on.
Especially during the double dutch time. I know, especially during the double dutch time.
You know, come on now. So, you know, how can young folk make sure they're ready? Like, because I think...
Okay, you can stop.
You know what I'm saying?
I think a fair assessment, honestly, is that, you know, unless someone just want to hate or be naive, I don't think people can say that either one of you are ready. You're in tune with your community, you're leading in the community, you're engaged in the community. You have people that will listen to you and follow you. You know, and one of you've been on a ballot one time before already, and so you know people will vote for you. You know, so what can other young people do to make sure that they're in line or at least ready if shakeups happen?
We've been hanging, me, Ted, Adrian, we've been hanging around each other for a few years now. I know me and Adrian have been friends for about 10 years or so now. You know, and it seemed like we've done everything that we could. We joined all the organizations they told us to join, you know, went to the school they said we should go to, you know.
I'm talking about other folks.
Well, what I'm saying is to me, I feel like we did what you're asking,
okay.
You know,
okay.
And it goes back that's to that, it goes back to that 90% of the time it's about showing up. It's about showing up and volunteering. It's about showing up and figuring out, you know, what do these kids need at this particular school, or you know, what are these people in this community going through? And I think it's just about being involved, you know. And you had to come here and start the process over. Once you start to be involved and start to speak out and start to stand up and start to volunteer and start to be a part of stuff, people start looking at you and people start noticing you and people start inviting you to other things.
That's right.
And next thing you know, you done built a whole nother, you know, met a whole different group of people. And so if I could encourage any young person, you know, that wants to, you know, come with us and walk towards progress, I say just get involved. You know, you gotta get involved in your church. Mm-hmm. You know, get involved in your school, in your
Democratic
children's education.
Party.
Get involved in the Democratic
Party.
Lord
knows we need some volunteers there.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
It's plenty to do, you know. For anybody that say, well, you know, ain't nothing for me to do here in Columbus, you know, that'd be farther from the truth. Come sit down with me at Starbucks and let's tell you how we can get you to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're here in the station with two amazing young gentlemen here in Columbus, Georgia, Pastor Adrian Chester and Mr. Marquis Skinny Avery. And we're going to take a quick break. This is Teddy Reese and Janae Renee. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Tri-City. Davis Broadcasting Incorporated is proud to announce that the 15th annual Women's Empowerment Luncheon is officially sold out. We're excited to welcome the beautiful and talented actress Regina Hall as the keynote speaker. Also appearing at the sold-out Women's Empowerment Luncheon, Grammy Award-winning gospel artist Erica Campbell. Erica Campbell will also be hosting her nationally syndicated morning show, Get Up Mornings with Erica Campbell, live that morning from 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. at the Columbus Convention and Trade Center. To get your free tickets to the live broadcast, visit dbiradio.com. This year's luncheon is brought to you in part by corporate sponsors, the law offices of attorney Darrell Dowdell, Walmart Market 16, and Aflac, along with platinum sponsors, McDonald's, W.C. Bradley, and Glory Hospice. Thank you also to our gold sponsors, Dr. Prendergast of Jane Plastic Surgery, Mercedes-Benz of Columbus, Huff's International Funeral Home, and Supreme Tax. And special thanks to Macy's.
Sunday Conversation. It's Janae Renee.
And Teddy Reese.
And in the studio with us, we got two amazing young men talking about the legacy of the city of Columbus. We got Skinny.
Yes.
He said I can call him Skinny. And Pastor Adrian Chester. Welcome back, fellas.
No, his name is Juice Man.
Juice Man. Oh, I'll call you that. Juice Man. Okay. Yes, Teddy won't do it.
Teddy's I'm not doing it.
All right, so yes, sir. Yes, sir. My question I want to ask you all, because I know, you know, I don't want to, we got to wrap this up pretty soon, but what do you all want to see happen for the city of Columbus going forward? When you look at where we're at now, what do each of you want to see happen going forward?
Well, I guess I would say one of the many things that I would love to see happen is Columbus to embrace the vision outside of the norm. So yes. our city motto is what progress has preserved, which is it's full of messages, which speaks to, you know, the joke is Columbus is 100 miles away from Atlanta and also 100 years behind Atlanta. We don't want to recreate and be Atlanta, but at least we want this place to be a place of opportunity for all, not just certain segments or only if you're coming to work at one of the major corporations.
You know, what progress has preserved sounds almost like Make America Great Again.
Well, Ted, you know.
The same book.
I was sitting here thinking, what progress?
You know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's one of the many visions of Columbus, just embracing new ideas, new people. It's always hard. That's one of the things.
I guess what I would like to see, just as a young activist in the city, I would like to see more black judges. I would like to see a black DA. I would like to see a black sheriff. I would like to see a black majority city council. I'd like to see a black majority school board. And the reason why I would like to see more black people in political positions is because we have the votes, you know?
I was going to say, let me ask you, because I'm fairly new here, being here about a year. Mm-hmm. Has there been
more black people voted?
Okay.
In more black people vote in Columbus than white people do.
Okay.
There hasn't been a black DA. There hasn't been a black mayor. Not a black sheriff.
We've had one black mayor, but it was because the
AJ McCone.
We haven't elected a black mayor.
Right, and he only served for 43 days.
Right.
Oh,
right.
But I really want to see us begin to take hold of power and do something with it. Now, you know, if we gain power and then 30 years later, Columbus still looks the same, then we know, wait, we did something wrong. But, you know, I think that we got the power to really make a difference in Columbus. But it starts with people getting out and vote.
And it's not just about black and white. It's about leadership being reflective of the people that they lead.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're talking about elected capacities reflecting the population of this city.
Right.
That's what we're talking about. And I totally understand where you come from. And I just wanted to make that point of clarity, because I didn't want anyone running away thinking, oh, you know, they just want black folks in charge. No, that's not the case.
Right.
We're just saying that the people that you serve, the elected capacity, should be reflective of those individuals.
Yeah, and I would go to the next step of not only saying political influence, but also economic influence here in Columbus also, that more opportunities are, you know, made available. That if you look at our major corporations here in Columbus, Georgia, and look at the top leadership of executives, that minorities, black and brown bodies, are far in between. Mm-hmm. So that was speaking with someone the other day.
I mean, I think a standout is Affleck.
Yeah.
Affleck is a standout with Arthur Tillman and with Teresa White, you know, at the top of the executive leadership there. But other than that.
Yeah, other than that. I mean, and so, but Affleck has a track record of being progressive.
And that's, know, to the credit of
leadership. So it takes leadership not only in the political realm, but also from the economic standpoint. As I was speaking with someone the other day, they said, you know, Dr. King, one of the components that we didn't push to the umpteenth degree was we receive social justice,
but no
economic justice. That's when you still have people working 40 hours a week, working decent jobs, but still struggling to make ends meet. That's an issue that we not only have to take on as a city, but as a people and a country.
So there are parts of this city, and I absolutely agree with you, that needs an economic steroid shot in the arm. you know, they need parts of the city need that big boost. And that's why personally I'm in favor of the potential proposed casino coming to South Columbus. I mean, you talking about dropping, dropping 1,000 jobs. You're talking about, you know, spurting growth along Victory Drive, which right now looks neglected and desolate. You know, you're talking about shopping centers. You're talking about other people loading buses and coming to Columbus, and everybody keeps going, well, they're just going to feed off the poor people in the city. If you understood casinos, you understood that over 75% of their people coming in participating are folks from the outside. Mm-hmm. We're talking about economic boost for Columbus. We're talking about people staying in our hotels. We're talking about things of that nature. And you know, people talk about crime. You can deter crime with adequate security and everything else. And so I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Casino gambling in particular?
Yeah.
I'm very much in favor of it. Columbus is an agent started talking about this earlier, is that for years we had experienced what some call the brain drain, where a lot of millennials were leaving, not coming back. But now we're starting to see those people coming back again. And one of the things that you always hear about being in Columbus is there's nothing to do. Well, if we bring a casino, you know, now we're giving people, you know, other entertainment options.
Entertainment venues, absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And so I think that is you know.
And you know, another issue I have with that, and I know we're here interviewing you two, but I got an opinion.
Yes,
the other issue I have that is this. You have so many people opposing it, but who has gotten off their butts in North Columbus and come down here to South Columbus and said, let me invest my business down here?
Nobody.
Or let me grow some jobs down here. There's a lot of naysayers, but there's nobody stepping up to say, I'm going to be the one. Not only am I opposed to it, but here's my proposed solutions. Mm-hmm. The solutions are inadequate. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But those who want to be opposed to, who don't have to live in the South Columbus area, who don't have to go down there and sit down and have a fine steak because there's no restaurants down there to even sit down and enjoy one.
That's very true, bro.
They want to continue to ignore that. We can't continue to ignore that part of the city.
We can't.
And as young folks, it's good to see that you're at least focused on it. Pastor, I'm not going to ask you your opinion on it because I don't want your church members getting on it.
Well, you know, I was going to give a very sanitized. I'm in favor of anything that will bring economic prosperity and opportunity to all people, whether that's through the form of anything. At this point, it seems to be the casino, although I'm not a gambler, you know, myself, but
I'm not either. Yeah. You know, when I go to Las Vegas, I don't spend a dime on my slot machine.
What do you spend it on?
I go. My Lord. I go jet skiing at Lake Mead. You know what I'm saying?
Chastity, are you listening?
I do the tours. I take the helicopter rides. There's a lot more to do, and we can build that type of environment here.
Right.
For even people who just... Victory Drive can look like I Drive.
It can be a strip.
In Orlando, Florida.
Yes, sir.
It can be a strip of entertainment, yes, business, sir. And shopping, and nightlife, and scooters, and everybody.
All right.
If we choose to.
Okay, right. Teddy. All right. I know you are passionate about this. We're going to have to continue this conversation, have another Sunday conversation just on that.
Okay.
And I'm going to let you get it all out.
I like it, though.
You know?
Those are issues that we really
need to go an hour. That's the part. We need to go an hour. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
I got one more pivotal question for them. What are we going to do about the level of crime and our young people? The shootings, the unnecessary deaths. You know, we had some heartbreaking stories last year.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially if you think about, you know, Miss Gloria and her family. It just, you could not hear that story and not want to shed a tear for her and her family. How are we going to break through with our young folks on this? Are we getting back to saying our economic opportunities and jobs and making sure people get a proper education? Because I'm sure there isn't a light switch answer. You're not going to be able to flip one and just get it. What do we do?
Yeah, and I would say not only the job opportunities and education, but also making sure when it comes down to mental illness, that we as a society don't criminalize mental illness, but actually deal with the issues on the table. And so that requires us being involved. Being involved, so it means if you can't do anything, if you can't go back and forth to Atlanta, you need to make sure that you have your representative's contact number in your phone. That anytime there's an issue that you don't agree with or that needs to be dealt with, such as funding for mental health institutions, I mean, that's just a phone call you have to make.
Mm-hmm. Well, I end by saying this, that Dr. King said that crime is the bride of poverty. And so when you look at most of our impoverished areas, you also know that the correlation is that they're also almost crime-ridden areas. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's a quote that says that there's nothing worse than a man with no education, no job, and a gun. You know, it don't get too, oh yeah, and no hope. You know, it don't get too much worse than that. And so I think that, you know, we really got to stop. Everybody at the end of the day, and I always say that everybody at the end of the day, they want to eat good. They want a steak dinner. You know, they want the best that life has to offer. Don't nobody want to be eating ramen noodles every night, you know? And so people are going to do whatever they got to do to feed their family. Now, is it right? Absolutely not, you know? But we should also remember that we should give people not a minimum wage job, but a livable wage job so that they can protect and house and take care of themselves and their families. So I think that it's a lot to do with economics. People so broke out here that they depressed and oppressed. You know, they done been in jail for something crazy. Now, you know, something on their record. Now, don't nobody want to hire them besides a $7 minimum wage job. And you can't feed your family on a minimum wage job. You can barely feed yourself on minimum wage, you know.
And just one last thing to what Marquis said. Dr. King once said that rioting and violence are the voice of the unheard. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that was you all kind of ended on what I was going to ask. It is the end of Black History Month, so I was going to ask you kind of one of your favorite quotes for Black History Month, or a favorite moment in Black history.
My favorite quote is, they don't kill me when I say this, my favorite quote is from Fred Hampton, who was the leader of the Illinois Black Panther Party, and he was actually killed at 21. The Cook County Police Department ran into his apartment and shot and killed him while he was in the bed with his wife.
Wasn't that on the 13th Amendment documentary? Did they talk about him? I think they did.
They probably did.
Yeah, I think they did.
But one thing he said, and I felt it so much when I myself went to jail for standing up, he said that you can kill a revolutionary, but you can never kill a revolution. You can jail a liberator, but you will never be able to jail liberation. You know, and for somebody to be that young, you know, they didn't kill him because he was just a nobody in Chicago. They killed him because he was powerful. And those words stick with me today. Yeah, Fred Hampton may be dead, but the revolution goes on.
I would say my favorite quote, or one quote, comes from Dr. Benjamin E. Mays that says, "Every man and woman has been born into this world with a particular purpose. And that particular purpose, that you ought to live some legitimate and distinct reasons for you having passed through." Mm-hmm. And one more. Comes from Howard Thurman. It says, "Do not ask what the world needs, but ask what makes you come alive, because what makes you come alive is what the world needs."
All right, sounds good. Perfect way to end a Sunday conversation and to wrap up Black History Month. Another one in the can, Teddy Reese.
Yes it is. And what a great conversation today. And I
felt like I was a part of the boys club.
Not, we don't discriminate, you know.
We used to have women in our group, didn't we?
You know?
They just kind of fell out.
You know, we allow everybody to be involved. You know,
I appreciate it.
Can I end with a quote, too?
Sure.
To end this, my favorite quote, one of my favorite quotes from Charles Hamilton Houston, and it's more pertaining to people in my profession, but he said, "A lawyer is either a social engineer or he is a parasite on society." And so, you know, I appreciate you gentlemen for being in here, and I think that can apply to anybody, you know, just remove and fill in the particular occupation. You know, either we can help society or we can be a harm to society. Right. And so you are two gentlemen that are not afraid to speak out. You're standing your ground. You're being a voice for others. And I ask that you please continue. Please continue and don't let anyone stop you. But this has been a great conversation.
Yeah, we may have to have them back, right?
Yes, I agree.
And continue this conversation. And thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
All right. That's been Sunday Conversation right here with Janae Renee.
And Teddy Reese.
Talk to you next Sunday.